next case this morning is Valdivia De Los Rios versus Valdivia. Next case is Valdivia De Los Rios versus Valdivia. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ryan Caldwell. I represent the appellant, Juan Valdivia De Los Rios. Obviously, for simplicity, I'm asking the court to allow me to reference the parties by their first name, just for simplicity and ease. We are asking the court to reverse and remand several different errors we believe were committed at the trial court level. But for today, we're looking at, I'm hoping to highlight four. Those being the valuation of the dissipated funds, valuation of the purchase option shares, denial of the inclusion of marital debts, and the division of post-decree future interest. Excuse me. Juan was terminated from employment from Chicana Copper Corporation in 2019 for misappropriating funds. At the time, he possessed 4 million shares of the corporation. In order to make the company whole, he relinquished those shares back to the company. The district court in its order held that the valuation of all marital property would be determined at the time of trial. And the time of trial was at the end of 2021, mid-2022. And this termination of employment happened in 2019. It also relied on Crystal's testimony that the value of these shares were on a stock exchange valued at about 49 cents per share in February or March of 2021. In total, the district court valued these shares at almost $2 million. The Supreme Court in Rhode stated that the court need not select just one date for valuing marital property. Instead, sensible considerations dictate that a date be rationally related to each of the different assets.
Was there a stock valuation as of 2019 in the record, as opposed to the time of trial?
There wasn't, but there was evidence from the from a document that Crystal provided that referenced, it's the corporate financial statement that was filed with the SEC that discussed the situation, the termination of the employment, and that there was a settlement issue, there was a relinquishment of the shares, and that the amount that it was around $400,000, which is the contention we believe is the value, appropriate value.
So I want you to isolate for me, what specific documentary evidence are you relying on in suggesting that the value of the 4 million shares is only half a million as opposed to 2 million?
Yeah.
Give me the exhibits.
It would be the Chicana financial statements. I don't know the exact exhibit number. I want to say it's number 37. But it is also referenced by Crystal in her brief on page 20, I believe it is, where they even suggest that the value is probably $1.2 million based on the statements made by the company in this financial statement.
You also rely on that W-2? For that proposition? Does that equate with the financial statements, or is that different, are those different numbers?
For some reason it doesn't, and I don't know why it doesn't. I'm not an accountant, so I'm not for certain why it wouldn't. I'm not putting as much credibility on that particular document. I understand that there are exchange rate possible issues there that I don't necessarily think may have any bearing in this matter, but we contend that the amount was the settlement between the company and Juan to relinquish those shares.
Is there any sort of settlement document or anything that you have as it relates to 4 million shares are being exchanged for the half a million dollars or so?
I don't believe there's any document that was entered on the record that suggests that.
So who had that burden? Was that your client's burden to establish these figures?
I think it's the burden of Crystal to determine what the value of these dissipated shares are, and we have the burden to refute that. which I believe we have on the...
And I understand you weren't the trial counsel for your client, but, you know, and we're seeing this more and more lately, these kind of cases that just scream for expert witness assistance in trying to figure all this stuff out, and yet parties are coming in, no experts, they just throw the stuff and want to see what sticks. I think it was your client's burden to establish what these shares were worth and at what time. And I think the court doing what it did is just saying, there's been a failure of proof here. Now, how is that not an abuse of discretion? How is that an abuse of discretion? The trial judge, it seems to me, was doing about as good as anybody could, given the lack of expert testimony here.
I would tend to agree, and again, I wasn't the trial counsel, and obviously I probably would have done things a little bit differently. I do believe we have a difference between testimony that's self-benefiting that values the property in 2021 as opposed to a document that says what the value of this potentially what this property is worth in 2019. I think that's kind of the error, is valuing it in 2021 rather than 2019.
Was there documentation of the 49 cents a share value that Crystal attributed to the stock?
No, it was just verbal testimony that that she says that she did her own research in February or March and came up with that determination.
So the documentation, according to what you're telling us, is the best documentation, or I guess the only documentation, I shouldn't use the word best, is the $1.2 million.
I would in this financial statement, there's two different values that are listed. Our contention is that the value is based on what the settlement was that's referenced in the document. Crystal, in her brief, references the $1.2 million amount, which, again, both of those figures are significantly lower than what the district court registered at the...
I mean, do you dispute, is there a factual dispute that 49 cents a share wasn't accurate as of 2021? Is that just they pulled the wrong number or anything like that?
I wasn't the trial counsel, so I'm not exactly sure what was discussed, but I can't tell you what the actual share value would have been.
Meaning I hear the argument saying, well, you chose the wrong valuation date, not that as of 2021 it wasn't valued at 49 cents a share.
Can you state that again?
Yeah, so as I understand your argument, you're just arguing you just chose the wrong date in 2021, not that in 2021 the shares weren't worth 49 cents a share.
Correct. I think I'm arguing both, that the share value isn't rationally related to the actual date that these shares were a part of the marital asset, and that the 2019 valuation would be more rationally related to that specific asset.
Okay, and I'm going to make sure I cover this too. Let's turn now, you have the 4 million shares, then you have the million option, right? And
correct.
I'm tracking with your argument here that you're saying, hey, you're valuing the million option at 49 cents a share, but there's a strike price of 40 cents a share, so the difference, the loss value to the estate should be from 49 to 40. What evidence do you have that's accurate?
Again, the district court just relied upon the testimony alone. There wasn't anything other than the documentary evidence that in the financial statement that said the strike price of all the shares was 40 cents. That's the only information we have.
That was just testimony in the record. I don't have a document I can look at to see the strike price or anything.
No document. And again, that would attest to what Judge Pearl had mentioned as well about experts.
And let me ask it in a little different way. So, and our Supreme Court's made it clear you don't absolutely have to have documentation, that obviously testimony is evidence. However, didn't the district court make some credibility findings with regard to your client, and how do we address that then?
There was maybe some miscommunication with regards to my client. You know, he's not, he does speak English, but it's not his first language. But I think the credibility lies in the fact that Crystal's the one that provided this testimony. She said 49 cents per share. And I'm not necessarily saying that that's wrong. I'm just saying for the purposes of the purchased stock shares, the court did not take into account the strike price. and should have in order to evaluate this property accurately.
Thank you.
I know I have 30 seconds left. I did want to address the denial of inclusion of the marital debts. The district court denied including them, stating that the reason was for that Juan wasn't making payments on the debt, and that they're speculated whether the collectors would ever try to collect on the debt. The district court never denied that these debts were not marital, just that they would not be included in the distribution analysis. I think and I see that I've ran out of time. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel.
May I approach you?
You may.
Good morning, Justices. Your Honor, may it please the court, counsel. My name is Ben Belmont, and I represent the appellee, Crystal Valdivia, in this case. Just by way of background, this is a 14-year traditional marriage where my client left her career to raise the party's four children while the defendant traveled the world for not only business but for pleasure. Now, the credibility issue I want to address first, because that was a big one, and that one was really concerning. I don't believe the defendant testified to the same thing twice in a row. I mean, we had...
You mean the appellant, right? You're talking the appellant.
I'm sorry, the appellant in this case. He had a significant credibility issue. This is a gentleman with an MBA and an international businessman that we under oath told us different stories. First, he told us in his answers to interrogatories he had 1 million shares of Chicana. Then in his first deposition, he had 2 million shares of Chicana. We learned through Exhibit 37, when we did the on the internet, that he had 4 million shares of Chicana, 1 million options. Defendant told us under oath he doesn't own, defendant told me under oath that he owns 20% interest in El Dorado. Now he's telling this court that he doesn't own anything. The appellant, I should say, told us that under oath that he owns 95% in Zyra, which is the name of one of his daughters in a corporate, in one of the minings. And now he says he doesn't own any. Defendant or appellant told us under oath that El Dorado paid all his expenses. Then under the first day of trial, he said El Dorado doesn't pay my expenses anymore. And the second day of trial, he says El Dorado pays some of my expenses. So I'm not sure what we are to believe in with anything he said. I will tell you, as far as on the stock options and the strike price, in their brief, they indicate that there should be a 20% strike price, and they take that off of Exhibit 37, a document we offered in evidence. But that's not applicable to this. If you look at where they got the 20-cent strike price, that was from a grant that occurred in May of 2020. Mr. Valdivia's grant was in September of 2017. They didn't present any information as to what the strike price was, and they would have had it. It would have been in their documents when he was granted those shares. And
was it 20 cents or 40 cents?
I thought it was 20 cents in Exhibit 37 where they indicate. But I could be. But in any event, the grant that we're dealing with is the September of 2017, and there's no information on that. As far as the use of, when we finally figured out he had 4 million shares and 1 million options, then it's determined a valuation. Well, this is a publicly traded company. I could get on my phone and tell you what the stock price is, and it was in U.S. dollars. And what we indicated at or around the time of trial, because the trial was continued two or three times, the prices changed, and we used a 49-cent share price on it. No, I didn't make a comp. I should have probably photocopied what I looked at online and put into evidence, but we didn't because that issue wasn't raised. nobody challenged the 49 cents. No one objected to Crystal's testimony. They didn't do it at trial, and they didn't do it in their motion to alter or amend, at which time we could have produced information as to how often that stock hit 49 cents. So
was
I think
there any evidence of valuation in 2019?
And as to what the, no, we did not ask what the price was unless you can discern it from, in our brief, we discerned a book value price of when he turned in his shares. But
and that was the 1.2?
That was 1.2, I believe, that they're talking about. But they're conflating two valuation with misappropriation. He didn't turn over his shares to make the company whole. The appellant misappropriated funds in the tune of $428,000 approximately. And that's in dollars. That's in American dollars, not Canadian dollars. How do we know that? Justice Welch, you saw the, you can see his W-2 for 19, and it's in, it's listed 428, not in Canadian dollars. So that's what was misappropriated. That has nothing to do with what the value of the company is. And when we indicate that there's a dissipation of that asset, he's in trouble. He gives away, in essence, that asset for selfish reasons, not for purposes of the marital estate. He doesn't get equal consideration for that. So,
is there anything, any document that even establishes that he in fact gave up the 4 million shares because of the amount of money that he took from the, or anything that really lays that out for us?
He didn't acknowledge that until we had Exhibit 37, which showed the 4 million shares. I was under the impression initially it was 1 million, then 2 million. And then we have Exhibit 37 where I impeached him with and said, it's 4 million shares. So that's... and no, he didn't provide us in the record. I don't believe there's anything in the record of or any discussion of the settlement agreement of what he did. But it certainly, based on the 49 cents a share, was not a was not to make the company whole again on that and giving up those shares. So the court did not abuse its discretion. It used what it had in the record to make determination as to what the value and what the loss is of this to the marital estate.
So appellant's arguing that the trial court erred in using a valuation date at the time of trial as opposed to 2019. What is your response to that?
We would have had it had he not dissipated. That asset would have been in existence at the time of trial, and that's when we're valuing things. Because if the theory behind the date of valuation is one to avoid dividing up assets that haven't been accumulated through the joint efforts of the parties, clearly what my client had been doing back here and handling everything, even though they're separated, she's taking care of four kids that have some significant issues as a result of the appellant leaving. She's left with no money. She's losing the house. We're defending another lawsuit regarding some construction to that house. So based on Seibert versus Ali, when after a six-year separation, the court thought it to be appropriate, the Supreme Court thought it was to be appropriate to divide the assets at the time of the trial, that would be in this case also.
Before your time has elapsed, I want to talk about, I understand this issue of, you know, what interests he currently owns in what. So whether it's Mokia or Zyra or El Dorado or Calpi or whatever it is. And so ultimately the court says, well, you have an interest in those, whatever it is. I'm concerned about the use of the word future.
Your Honors, a future interest is still an interest. It's subject just to being divided in a divorce. We use future interest in a lot of different aspects in this business, in pensions, in deferred comp, in stock options, and that's One of the reasons why I had proposed a future interest, because I don't know what this guy has now, because it keeps changing. I'm assuming he had 20%, but he says he doesn't have any, but if he has an opportunity to get options, but that's used in the term future interest. When you have options, you can gain a future interest. Termination payments that we used in Bergmeier versus Bergmeier, or extended termination payments, where he had to satisfy things, and if he did, then he was going to get these termination payments, and if he did, then my client, Ms. Bergmeier, was going to get a portion of those payments. So that's, I don't know if we use it as a term of art, but it is something we had. I assume that the court did it broad enough to try to encompass what he may or may not be doing down in Peru to prevent my client from obtaining her interest. So
would the future interest be valued as of the time of dissolution?
Well, it would be, the future interest would be whatever he has, she has. And when he gets it. So if he says he doesn't have an interest in Kalapui, with Zaira, which has mining concessions. Well, even though he had 95% at one time and he acquires it later, then she's entitled to 50% of that, because this whole mining operation commenced during the course of the marriage, and she should be entitled to that. And we narrowed it down to these four, El Dorado, Mochica, Zaira, and Kalapui would be the four.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we would our time is up. I respectfully request that the decision of the district court be affirmed. Thank you. May I be excused?
Thanks.
How much time did we take, counsel, over?
55 seconds.
We'll allow you 55 seconds to address the last issue discussed on future interests, if you'd like.
Thank you. It's not disputed that if one has an ownership stake in any of these companies at this time, that it's not a marital asset. What we believe is an abuse is if he were to acquire any future interests in these businesses post-decree. I don't believe there's any Nebraska case law on division of post-decree assets, but I think my brief outlines several other jurisdictions' case law on the matter, and it's pretty unanimous. It's earnings and assets acquired after divorce are not part of the marital estate subject to division.
But here we don't really know what he owned and what he didn't own. It just seems to me this is a situation that's ripe for fraud.
I can't comment on the credibility. I can only state that that's what the testimony was, is what he owned at that time. Again, if he acquires assets in the future, I think there would be documentary evidence to show that. If he acquires a stock or if he buys one of these companies out of bankruptcy, there's going to be something there to show that this asset was purchased sometime in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you both. We appreciate your appearance here today and your arguments. You are excused and your case is submitted. The final case of the day is in the matter of Public Service Commission versus Bangart Properties. I am recused from the case. Judge Reedman will be joining the panel, and Judge Pirtle will take over the presiding role.